A quiet but revolutionary change is happening in the way the government spends $1 trillion a year for health care. Traditional fee-for-service is giving way to payment for quality and outcomes. It's one of several innovations overseen by Health and Human Services and its IDEA Lab. Greg Downing is Executive Director for Innovation at HHS. He explains why innovation is prominent in the department's strategic plan.
This is a really important time, Tom, for many aspects of our healthcare delivery enterprise, our research enterprise, and as well as our social service parts of the department. And the notion of having a focus on methodology and how we manage risk in terms of projects has really been one of the key things that this administration has been focusing on, everything from crowdsourcing, open innovation, a lot of different new methodologies, and bringing in ways to get new ideas into the government. And my friend and former mentor, Todd Park, who was the CTO at the beginning of the administration, really used to often cite Bill Joy's law from Sun Microsystems that most of the smart people in the world don't work for you, but you want to be able to tap into those ideas and bring them into healthcare. So we've opened up the system. That's probably the number one thing, is finding new avenues to use social media, use technology and ways to connect with people who understand problems and provide potential solutions.
And from the standpoint of the innovation lab, that the area that you run at HHS, I mean, I see three areas where I've noticed innovation. One is in payment for it, which is kind of important, the clinical care itself, and also research leading to advances in whatever care might come down the line. Are all of those part of what you look at in terms of where innovation can happen?
Certainly, and this innovation is happening all across the department, and we have 100,000 people and 12 federal agencies. So what we try to do is to help provide a framework around testing those ideas in many different aspects. So the IDEA Lab was really founded on the principles around programs that we can use internally to help with the development of innovation methodologies internally. IDEA Lab stands for Innovate, Design, Entrepreneurship, and Action. The action point has really been one of the key things that the Secretary has been driving on here. In terms of health reform, I think maybe the most significant thing is the change from fee-for-service to the value-based systems that we're now seeing in play. And this is radically changing many aspects of healthcare delivery, focusing on cost and quality. And a key element of that is the transparency factors of being able to understand, you know, are the services I'm getting comparable from one institution to another, one doctor to another? And the aspects of cost transparency as well is a new thing in the last decade. And it's very hard to spark innovation and competitiveness without transparency around data. Our research enterprise, you can look at this in many different aspects of technology, the uses of telehealth, telemedicine, and taking care to the service and services to where the people are at the time they need it, and identifying new ways and platforms of diagnosing and monitoring disease. And you've been hearing a lot about precision medicine, the uses of genomics, and many other molecular targeted type of measures to guide therapy. And these are revolutionary approaches now being practiced in many aspects of healthcare.
I wanted to ask you just briefly about something you mentioned a moment ago, and that is the accountable care organizations that are changing the fee-for-service model. Big change for CMS and a lot of the dollars that are spent by HHS. In many ways, that reminds me of the health IT reform that has been worked on for a number of years, in that it ties together what have been disparate elements in a given individual's health care, either records that don't match or providers, of which people have 2, 3, 4, 10, depending on your age and health, that don't talk to one another.
Yeah, and I think now we're beginning to see the impact of health IT and data in general on the redesign of clinical care practices and giving providers back data on how well their patients are doing under different management schemas. And there's a lot of different ways this is unfolding, and we're using a variety of incentive mechanisms to encourage the bundling of care services together and facilitating team-based care decision-making practices. And a large part of this is enabled by technology, that you could not have done these 10 years ago. The data weren't there. The ability to communicate wasn't there. So the information and communication technology areas are really hastening, opening the door now, really, for new care processes that the consumer is going to realize the benefits of this. And we're, you know, it's still early in this game, but we're seeing a great deal of innovation occurring all across America in our health centers focusing around this, these new payment methodologies.
And can that also be translated to not just the big networks like the Kaisers and the Cignas, where everybody's under some sort of a framework or corporate umbrella, but also to where disparate little companies, this doctor, that clinic, that nursing home, whatever the case might be?
Yeah, certainly. This is often been said that there's never been a better time to be an innovator in healthcare. And whether you're a small startup working on consumer apps or helping with decision-making processes for provider groups, you know, it's not uncommon now for your providers to be working off an iPad, for example. And e-prescribing has been around for a decade now, and now in terms of decision support. And the physician communications and provider communications with the patient communities now are being hastened by technology. So it's having impact, you know, whether at the Mayo Clinic or down the street at Main Street, you know, primary care.
We're speaking with Greg Downing, Executive Director for Innovation at Health and Human Services. And a moment ago, you said that the idea and the innovation labs concept are providing a framework for research by HHS's many agencies. Let's elaborate on that a little bit more.
Yeah, and this is an experiment, frankly. We've been building a number of programs to recognize and incentivize innovation within our own organization, as well as focusing on outside aspects. And so dealing with the latter one first, we've been, over the last 8 years, through our health data initiative, been producing large numbers of data sets that are fodder for people to develop new applications in geospatial locations of facilities and matching quality of different services and so forth. So the Health Data Initiative is one of the leading efforts that was underway and has been sparking a lot of open innovation through crowdsourcing methods you know, throughout this time. Our internal efforts have really been focused on providing a framework. We know that there's a lot of expertise and insights into understanding Medicaid service programs or Head Start, and that we have identified lots of pockets of innovators within the government. They didn't have a platform or a way to do that. So our Ignite Accelerator program, for example, runs 90-day sprints twice a year, and we've had, you know, on average about 45 or 50 projects a year that come through there. We provide mentoring, a lot of coaching, and their goal is to take a new idea with no data behind it and create a minimal viable product and go out and test that with their customers, figure out what's working, what doesn't, and then carry on to the next step of implementing that.
Can you give some examples?
Sure. So we have been doing a lot in terms of data applications, but also some improvements in processes. So lean methodology, for example, is not an innovation in itself. This is widely used throughout many industries to improve the efficiencies of business processes. But just the practice of bringing that into the organization was a hard thing to do. Lean had not been implemented in any case, and the folks at CMS brought in some talent to help implement this, and they've resulted in a fair amount of reduction in time in processing claims eligibility information and a lot of the pieces that go into how our healthcare delivery system is working. We've had some incredible improvements in consumer services for our loan repayment programs, for example. And more recently, in dealing with our Administration of Children and Families, has been doing a great deal of work in advancing in our Head Start programs and also in food nutrition programs of being able to get real-time information back to programs about eligibility, where the care services are needed, and so forth. So many aspects of the department, from Indian Health Services, where we're actually providing healthcare insights through the uses of data and new processes, to speeding up emergency room waiting room times, for example, to many of the business processes internally. So it's not just all technology, but giving people a way to test ideas and a framework in which to compare data about their new ideas and how well they work.
Sounds like there could be multiple outcomes to some of these research projects in terms of better delivery of care where it's needed, but also cost savings and some efficiencies at the same time.
Yeah, and that's a big part of what we see happening is that they, particularly in the IT acquisition areas, your show, Tom, has featured a number of our efforts at bringing in agile methods of technology development and getting a lot of user testing and using different methodologies to get the best technology and the best bang for the buck. And we've been very impressed with some of the work that our colleagues have been doing in the IT space to get a better product at the end of the day and save the taxpayer money.
And I wanted to return to a point you made a few minutes ago, too, and and also inciting of Todd Park, who was at the department earlier, you know, in the decade, with respect to finding the innovative ideas among people already at HHS, career people such as yourself, who may have been overlooked or maybe, you know, in favor of, you know, the shiny new thing or the incoming expert, this kind of thing. And so what's your sense of how much innovation has been unleashed organically from the existing workforce?
Well, one of the things we've been trying to do is to develop some metrics about how well our programs are doing. We track the federal employee value surveys that are done every year in terms of attitudes around innovation. We're also studying at the program person and program levels are difficult to measure the effectiveness of these activities. But we like to track the people. We think we've developed a very vibrant network of over 1,000 people now who have been through one of our programs at one point in time or another. And this has often led to their creativity being expressed in other ways in new jobs, and they tend to be some of the more high-powered and productive employees once they've been given an opportunity. And it's developing this culture of innovation and entrepreneurship that I've been most interested in. And then finding the ways to, you know, get the best ideas out there and rewarding those ideas and giving them an opportunity to test them. And those seem to be the most valued parts of what our programs do.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Idea Lab itself, the progenitor of all that we've been talking about. Give us an update on how it's going and what some of the major programs under the Idea Lab are these days.
Great. Well, thanks, Tom. Idea Lab is a physical facility, has existed for almost 4 years coming this January. And space is important. We have a pretty open space with a lot of whiteboards and a lot of tools that are used in the innovation processes.
At headquarters?
It's just upstairs from the secretary's office.
You're not in one of the outer counties in a barn somewhere.
Well, we take the show on the road. And one of the interesting things is our colleagues in a number of the operating divisions, CDC and HRSA in particular, have been firing up their own innovation programs and to carry the effort even further, which is really great to see. And we have a relatively small group, 6 to 8 people, and then we have approximately 6 to 8 entrepreneurs and residents that come in for a year or two to work on key projects. They're bringing talent into the organization. And so it's a pretty vibrant place where ideas are hacked out, and we're on the lookout for new tools and toys to implement and process. We've created a IT sandbox where a lot of early development work can go on and in safe quarters. And, it becomes a place where we can engage with the private sector and bringing new applications in. In the early days, social media was absent, frankly, from the workplace. And one of the first things that we did in the beginning was to work with our security teams and figure out how can we utilize Facebook and Twitter and a variety of methods. And now that's become the normal part of the workspace and work day now. And so we take credit for a large part of the policy pieces that go behind this, challenge competitions, a lot of our open data initiatives. All of these have underneath them some experimental process that goes on that helps demonstrate their value.
Does the secretary, Syl Burwell, ever stop by to the lab and check in?
Well, we utilize our leadership in a variety of ways to connect with the outside world as well as with our leadership. And we've had a number of programs over the years where the secretary meets with our best innovators, and the communications to them have been very strong and signals about this is a valued aspect of their workplace, of the workplace. And we continue to see many of the leaders across the department continue to embrace these notions of open innovation and innovation in the workplace.
So it sounds like having a physical space that fosters innovation is fairly important to this, even in the days, the age of mobility and teleworking and that kind of thing.
I think it's the connection points and being able to think clearly and test the limits of what we can do, and bringing them people together at some points has been really important to do that. Our current CTO is Susanna Fox and has been working in the sort of the maker space and micro devices and engaging the entrepreneur community. And we've done a number of events over the last 6 months or so, really engaging Bringing entrepreneurs into healthcare and solving problems in many spaces to which there haven't been solutions at this point, and that physical gathering of bringing people with expertise and understanding of the conditions that we're trying to address, along with the engineering principles, material science, the IT pieces, electronics, that interaction of the people who know the problem with those who understand solutions and how to design solutions is really important. I should also just point a little bit to our design work internally, in that user-centric design and understanding the user's needs has been a really strong part of the program. We've been working in partnership with other design shops such as IDEO and others that really bring some hard principles to bear to our staff to understand, you know, here are the things that you have to work with. Let's test them out with the users and see how well these adapt to what their needs are.
We're speaking with Greg Downing, Executive Director for Innovation at the Department of Health and Human Services. And you've mentioned several things that foster innovation. Other agencies looking to emulate this, it might be a good idea to describe some of the things to avoid to make sure you don't tamp down on innovation.
Well, one has to also embrace the notion that most things don't work the first time you try them. And the notion of failing fast and taking the knowledge from failures into the next sort of level of understanding, and this is, if one's trained and been in the research paradigm, you'll know that that's one of the keys to breakthroughs, is being able to understand why things didn't work. So I think that's important. The second is that it's hard. There are a lot of barriers to innovation within any large bureaucracy and large organizations. Really thrive on predictability, and change is difficult in any context. We've been great in that we have a leadership models that are really encouraging testing new ideas and getting, you know, people to recognize where there's an opportunity and testing those in a particular framework in which we know the answers to them. So I think it's primarily really understanding the environment you're in, and that a lot of times we don't even have the problem scoped right. And that can lead to great insights that help with, if not solving the problem, better understanding about it.
And what's the best way to bring in the outside expertise, especially from the, in the HHS's case, the practitioner community? I'll make an analogy, say, with FAA, which has to create rules for drones. Well, you have to have the drone people come in and give you an idea of how the darn things work. Yeah. In the case of HHS, there's the healthcare provider community and maybe to some extent even patients. So how do you get the right kind of external expertise in to blend with the internal?
Well, you're right, Tom, in that not hardly a day goes by and that there isn't a convening of some group of experts to help us with insights into, you can take Zika, for example, and being able to understand the methods of tracking this. Our healthcare spaces, last Thursday and Friday, we had a group of experts coming in talking about quality measures of being able to measure the right things in healthcare to know that we're, in, as we talked earlier about our health reform mechanisms, are we measuring the right things in these processes? Another example that we've been using is in our entrepreneur in residence programs, which have been quite popular across the department. At the White House level, these are presidential innovation fellows or another model, where unique knowledge bases and expertise can come in and work on a problem for, you know, 3 months, 6 months, a year. And we've been utilizing that as a way to help rapidly bring the our teams up to speed with new capabilities. And I can give you one example that we've talked with you about previously, is in our organ transplantation world. We had problems with sort of the tagging of materials and organs and getting them to the right places. And this was all being done by paper, and recruited a super expert in logistics from UPS who had a personal experience around organ transplantation and wanted to help fix the problem. He came in for a year, ended up staying for three. And just this past spring, the results of his work in using barcoding and geospatial mapping and others, has really eliminated a lot of the problems we've had in terms of getting organs to the right people at the right place in the right time.
I imagined imaging and barcoding and all of the other new technologies could really apply there, so someone doesn't open up the cooler and say, hey, I was expecting a heart and you sent me a kidney.
Well,
maybe not that extreme.
We hope that those days are behind us. And but there's many, the point, I guess, is that there's many people out there who have unique insights to problems that we would never be able to solve on our own. And again, this is to the point of open innovation in general is a relatively new concept, but in the industry world, Procter & Gamble and Nordstrom's are using all sorts of means to get marketplace ideas and early feedback and not wasting a lot of time in this. I was in Louisville, Kentucky several weeks ago, and General Electric's appliance world there is really quite awesome. They've built a new facility called First Build, where anybody in the community can come in and work with 3D printing, all sorts of design aspects. And the whole notion is developing an open community around cooking and appliances and developing things for people with disabilities who can't use devices and talkable refrigerators. And I'd love them to do some work in terms of designing how our meals and the nutritional values of things in our refrigerator can be programmed. And your purchasing patterns and cooking patterns are done in a healthy way, informed by technology in your refrigerator. So there's a lot of opportunity, I think, for collaboration with industry, and the exchange of personnel and ideas around this are one of the ways that I think we've been making great gains in through our partnerships and collaborations with them.
And so to summarize, with several years of directed and deliberate innovation happening at HHS, would you say that the healthcare industry in general, led by this effort, has moved from the market was at, say, 4 or 5 years ago?
Well, I think there's a lot of different reasons for why innovation is so vibrant in healthcare. Part of it is it was stagnant for so long. The transparency was one factor. And then let's face it, there's a lot more marketplace out there right now, a lot as a result of ACA. 22 more million more people have access to healthcare. There's a greater opportunity for it, the greater information availability. And, what we've been trying to do is to bring in talent and technologies from other fields, communications and travel and financial services, to look at things like fraud detection that we talked about earlier and many other aspects of enhancing our business services. I just want to, historically, I've been really doing a lot of work recently on looking back at the history of how this has evolved in government. And Michael Barber and Tony Blair began back in the early 2000s in their prime minister's delivery unit, and really focusing on better services in three sectors: healthcare, transportation, and education. And we see remnants of that here, and there's actually a fairly robust amount of management literature evolving in this. And so I'm confident that the role that government plays in continuing to facilitate innovation can be quite instructive to both the private sector, as well as helping set the pace for what consumers understand as the value that government can provide for them.
Greg Downing is Executive Director for Innovation at Health and Human Services. Share both parts of this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.